Good to see you all this afternoon, so I want to call the order for the record. My name is George Patterson, Commissioner of Public Security, sitting in for our chair, Michael Kane, who wasn't able to be with us today. We've got a number of items we've got to go through. Today's meeting is official meeting of the board. It's open to the public, but we run out of compliance with RSA 91A. Meeting materials for the board and the public can be found by visiting the Department of Business and Economic Affairs website. We've got a number of items to work through, and we're going to get started now, so if we can have the roll call, please.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, Mike Alberts, Jim Alden, Joe Alexander, Stephanie Ashworth,
here.
Kevin Avard, Rick Bartle, Alan Ballou,
here.
Christine Brennan, Anya Brzezinski, Paul Callahan, Kenneth Clinton, George Capatis,
present.
Mary Crowley,
present.
Tyler Eaton, Patrick Fall, James Jerry, Chase Hageman,
here.
Michael Kane, Shane Long,
here.
Donnelly Lozo,
here.
Lorianne Lundgren,
here.
Larry Major, Ashok Patel. Larry Major.
Present.
There we go.
We go back.
Timing. Tracy Pelton.
Here.
Jim Prue. Shannon Reed.
Here.
Jay Rouet. Richard Sala.
Here.
Gary Thomas. Colin Tiernan.
Here.
Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
Okay, great. Thank you again all for coming today. The meeting minutes are found in your packet, and I hope everybody's had an opportunity to review the minutes. Any errors, corrections, or omissions? If not, I'll entertain a motion to approve the minutes.
So moved.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Anybody from the public that would like to speak? Good. Okay, we're going to start the agenda with some informational items. Staff will not be presenting. We're going to be answering any questions you have. Joel, could you please walk us through that?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So we have a presentation today from my friend and colleague, Janelle Lawton, from our department, from BEA, to talk about outdoor recreation.
Hello. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for the introduction, and thank you for the welcome. I'm the director of the Office of Outdoor Recreation Industry Development. And I'm here today to talk to you about some workforce opportunities in New Hampshire and how we can use something we have an abundance of, the outdoors, as a recruitment and retention tool. So, the Office of Outdoor Recreation Industry Development Board sits within the BEA. It's been strategically placed there to bring together businesses and communities and partners to help grow the economy. And one big way we can do this is by leveraging the outdoors. So this isn't just about hiking and skiing and all the fun stuff. This is a 3.9 billion industry here in New Hampshire. And that's something that we can use as a tool to attract talent and retain talent, and to make New Hampshire really stand out as a place where people want to live and work. So we created the Workforce Toolkit for the Outdoor Lifestyle, and I'm gonna jump into this and explain it. All right, why the toolkit? So we know that workforce changed, and we saw this coming out of the pandemic. We know that people wanted more than just a paycheck. They were looking for meaning. They were looking for flexibility and a lifestyle that aligns with their values. At the same time, businesses are faced with challenges in hiring and retention. So how do we compete? How does a small state like New Hampshire compete? And what we can do is lean into what we do really well that makes us really special. Our natural outdoor settings and the high quality of life that we have in the state. So the toolkit is based on the concept of developing an employee value proposition, or an EVP. And this is really about defining what makes your company unique and a rewarding place to work. Your EVP offers your employees something beyond a salary. It's things like culture and growth. And right here we have this pyramid. I'm going to talk you through it just a little bit. The baseline is your compensation and your benefits. That's where you come in and be as competitive as you can. That's contractual with your employees. But the next level up is the differentiated level. That's where your employee comes in an experiential position. They want to know what their career could look like working for a business. They want to know what their career development opportunities are, what work-life balance is, and the company culture. The next level is what really allows a company to call out why they're unique. And this is the emotional connection to their employee, the purpose and the mission. We know that employees want to align with the company they're working for. They want to believe in the purpose and the mission of the business. All right, so the toolkit talks about putting the EVP to work, and we've broken it out into these five modules: recruitment and employer branding, company culture and value integration, career skills and development, and community resources model. Each section has tools. They have ideas that can be adapted no matter the size of the company or the budget that the company might be working with. So the first module is recruitment and employer branding. This is how a business tells their story to demonstrate what their company values. And a company's employer brand is the first impression that goes out there to employees. It's really important. It's what candidates see when you post a job. They're imagining, when they see this and they read a job posting, what their life is going to look like working for a company like yours. So what we want to do here in New Hampshire is show them what working in New Hampshire can look like. We want to talk about things like your trails, lakes, the seacoast, small town charm, mountain views, vibrant cities. Whatever it is that your region is talking about, that messaging can be included in that job description to try and recruit employees to your area or to your business. Oops, sorry. All right, it just woke up. Hold on there. Little bit of luck. All right, here we go. So, recruitment employer branding. This is a great example. I'm sorry, this image on the right is not popping up. It's actually a video. But we have two examples here, or one. but in the toolkit, you'll see many more examples. Virgin Outdoor uses employee testimonials and photos to tell their story. Nemo Equipment has a great video, which is what's not popping up, but if you go online to the tool, you'll see it, and it's a quick watch. But it really blends company culture and outdoor lifestyle. And this really talks about how your employees are your best brand ambassadors. Let them tell your story. All right, company culture and value integration. This is really about how you can tell your value, sell your value as a business, as part of your company's identity. It doesn't have to be an add-on or a plus. You can easily talk about things or incorporate benefits like Flex Fridays or encouraging walking meetings that show that you value balance and health and well-being of your employees as much as you value productivity, or even more so. And this is really going to be important to employees. We have a couple examples here about some companies that are doing this. Minus 33 gives 10% of their summit socks to support the Mount Washington Observatory's work. This was something that the Minus 33 employees chose. BIA hosts an annual ski and snowboard day. Hopefully we'll see some of you guys there. But again, you know, to show this investment in employees, it doesn't have to be big. It can be something as simple as putting a bike rack outside the front door of your office so employees can bike commute to work. Or creating a space at lunch for, you know, your group something really as simple as that that really shows a sense of purpose for your organization. A little bit more about the benefits and programs. We give great examples of pre-tax, post-tax, and employee perks. And one thing I'll say about this is you need to find out what your employees actually want. Companies need to ask them. And we give great examples of short surveys that employers can use to ask their employees, what is meaningful to you? Would you like to do a volunteer day off? Would you like an extra day of PTO? Would you like recreation passes to go to a state park? Lots of ideas in here, and we have a couple I'm going to share with you. These are a couple that came up when we were researching this project. And I'll just note that the lifestyle spending accounts, the LSAs, those are the post-tax dollar program that can be used for anything, including gear and fitness classes or park passes. And Badger Bomb is a great example. They offer each employee up to $1,000 per year in a wellness fund. So that's a great, great example of that program in action. Okay, module 4, career skills and development. We've learned that employees stay where they're growing. They stay where they feel valued. And investing in your team through professional development, through memberships, through education support, all these show an alignment with your company values and they build loyalty with your employees along the way. So we give great examples in the toolkit of building your outdoor professional pipeline, professional development, and networking, all that are connected to the outdoors. A little bit more on module 4. It talks about learning through experience. And I'm kind of preaching to the crowd here, but we have a section that says, hey, businesses, are you looking at your local career tech centers? Are you looking at apprenticeship in NH? Are you looking at all these other organizations out there that are doing great work as potential next generation or next your next employees? Coming into your space. Module 5 is the community resources model. And this really is about helping your employees really envision working for you. So when employees are coming to work for you, they're saying, hey, where can I live? Can I find housing? What about schools? What about childcare? What about transportation? We have a section that talks about all these things. And not in a level that you'd be like, okay, you know, we've got the answer to all your questions, but you can really get creative and have it be specific to your business. And this is something like, for example, there's a business on the seacoast that offers their current employee stipends to host new hires. So this is like a simple human solution to a housing problem, right? It helps people who are coming to the area land on their feet, feel welcome, and feel connected. A little bit more about module 5. This is really about local lifestyle connections in a way for employers to really create and promote these experiences out to their employees. And we have a lot more examples in the book, in the toolkit. All right, so connecting, aligning, and promoting. One thing I'll say is that, you know, no one size fits all. I've been a small business owner and I've worked in big businesses, the biggest business of all, state of New Hampshire, right? And I'll have to say that this toolkit is so flexible, it's really made for businesses to start where they're at. And they can have a budget or zero budget. Whatever it is, there's ways for any employer to come in here and find something that's really going to elevate their EVP that's going to help them with their recruitment and retention strategies. And then last, I would like to give you all this great QR code and the postcard that I've left on in front of your booklets there. Additionally, in the back, So feel free to take these. There are more in the back, and you're welcome to take more and hand them out to anyone who might be interested. There are a few booklets back there as well. That is just a curated version of the full toolkit, which is quite big. So I encourage you all to check it out, and feel free to reach out to me if you have any questions. And thank you for your time.
Questions, anybody?
Hi, Tracy Pelton from ProCon. How do you share this out to businesses in New Hampshire?
So it is hosted on the BEA website. The QR code will take you directly to the link. How am I getting it out there specifically? I am working through the other agencies, through giving a lot of presentations like this. We've put a huge effort to go out through the chambers and provided packets to the chambers, so they're getting them out to their businesses as well.
We're a member of two chambers, and I haven't heard of any of this, so it'd be great to, I think, have the chambers get it actually physically out to the members.
Absolutely,
Via email and with, to all the membership. And then another thing that might be of interest is there's lists, like the Book of Lists, the New Hampshire Book of Lists, New Hampshire Business Review, and things like that, where they give you a contact, and you can just send it out to those people as well.
Great.
Top private companies, top family-owned companies, and that kind of thing. They have the most employees in the state, so you reach a lot of people.
Great. Thank you for those suggestions.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Sorry. Piggybacking off of that, I think you mentioned the concept of brand ambassadors.
Yes.
And I've always thought the state of New Hampshire needs brand ambassadors. I used to think that liquor store employees would make really good ones because everyone has to interact with them when they come into New Hampshire. But maybe it is more Department of Natural and Cultural Resources or BEA. Do you guys have any thoughts on trying to empower people to be brand ambassadors for the state?
We do have the grant state ambassadors. And they tend to be a little bit more focused, I think, on the tourism side of things. But it's a really great idea, and how we really, at a state level, have a vehicle, a tool for getting this information out. We talked about having our listservs, and really a lot of this is building and developing. So this was just launched in May. And as we're moving forward, it's been on a couple of, like you said, chambers. Like, I get included on the emails, but they might get overlooked, right? And a lot of this is just getting this information out over and over again, so people see it, and they're like, oh yeah, and they remember. And we're all in the same boat. We all have a to-do list like this long, right? So when I go out and I talk about these things, I'm always like, who's going to remember it, right? What's the takeaway? So the big takeaway for me is the postcard. If you have it on your desk and you think about it later, reach out to me. Would happily connect in to any resources that you have.
Yes. Chase Eggman, just to add to what Janelle said. So not only do we do that, but like Janelle just spoke on Friday. At the MEP summit about this, there were over 300 businesses in the room for that discussion. We have our business resource staff that are now sharing this tool with businesses in their regions. So it's something that we're pushing out broadly as an agency, as one of the many tools that we can bring to bear to support the business community.
Yeah, you almost want to reach out to HR professionals at all the big businesses to say free resource.
Absolutely.
Please leverage it.
Absolutely.
And I did reach out to them on Friday, but again, I know it's not everyone's priority, so it's like follow-up again. So it's a resource, it's free, that's the big thing. I really would love for this to get out to as many businesses as possible.
Other questions?
Shannon Reed, has the state of New Hampshire embraced this as a recruitment tool?
So that's a good question. We actively use it in the BEA. We have a lot of our departments use these tools. But as a whole, on a state level, I'd have to kick that up the HR chain and ask. Okay. Anything?
Any other questions? Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Item 2B, kick it over to Nick Massey.
All right, so I'm going to talk about the year-end program year 24, then where we are with the start program year 25. The Office of Workforce Opportunity ended July 1st, 2024 through June 30th, 2025, reporting year, program year 24, documenting 73 rapid response activities that affected 1,459 workers. This is an increase in rapid response activities, but a decrease in the effective number of employees from the program year 23. The previous program year, 50 rapid response activities affecting 1,997 people workers were documented. All rapid response sessions were offered as in-person events to all businesses, announcing closures and or substantial layoffs, affecting more than 25 employees. Many times, depending upon the specific situation, a rapid response session was held when less than 25 employees were affected, but the impact of the community warrants assistance. Virtual rapid responses have been offered when the staff are remote or virtual or scattered throughout the state and not centralized or take the best solution for a specific situation. For program year 24, 867 affected employees attended one of the in-person rapid response sessions. The industries that were provided in rapid response sessions were retail, retail pharmacy, education, healthcare, manufacturing, and logistics. So from there, I'm going to go over to the program year 25, where we've started so far. So, with the start of program year 25, completion of the first quarter and the start of the second quarter, we've had 17 rapid response activities up through today across the state. This is an increase of 5 from the same period in program year 24, where we had 12. The 17 rapid response activities affected a total of 626 employees in total that were employed by just all about all industries, manufacturing, IT, healthcare, retail, education, social services, and forestry. Of the 17 rapid response activities, 14 resulted in rapid response presentations, and all but one were in person. There were 240 employees that were attending our presentations in total. One item of note is five of the organizations that scheduled rapid response presentations required multiple sessions due to the number of employees affected and the need to continue operations while providing access to all shifts. And this is another thing, though. The two largest industries affected were IT, tech, and manufacturing. These two industries account for more than half of those laid off so far this program year at 364 affected employees. And all were based in Hillsborough County, so we've got some concentration both in the location and the industries. Thank you. That's it.
What questions?
Any questions
from anybody?
We're going to kick it over to Melissa Carter for item 2D.
All right, so Melissa Carter for the record. This is the financial update as of quarter four for the last program year. I do want to point out that the summary tables have the wrong date on them. The information was accurate. It's for the end of June, not December. So apologize about that. Our program year 22 grants were to end on June 30th, and those were all completely extended. I'm in the process of closing those out now. The program year 23 grants are actually further along than it shows here because this was for June, and we're now in October. But we have obligated just about 100% of all the funds, but effectively drawn down 92% of those. And then our program year 24, we have obligated 94% of them and expended 59%. So we are using the funds as effectively as we can. We're not getting as much as we did last year, but they're going out to everybody that we contract with. So. Any questions?
Questions, anybody?
And we will update the website with the correct date on those tables.
Okay.
Yep. Sure. So Lisa will take us through the next few items. We instead of bouncing back and forth, we thought we'd give Lisa the show for a bit to take away.
So Lisa Gerard, for the record, agenda item 2B is program performance updates for PY24 quarter four. At the end of the quarter four, we looked in pretty good shape across our Title I programs. We did finish off the year, which is the next item number. We were very close on credentials for two of the programs at the end of the quarter, adult and youth credential attainment. We did not end up getting to the measure for the youth credential measure. We're short quite a few percentage points. However, they do go through a statistical adjustment model, so I'm hopeful that we will, after the statistical adjustment model is put in place, that we will be at the 90% of the goal. U.S. Department of Labor counts it meeting your goal if you get to 90% of that goal. So we're hopeful that we can still kind of pull that measure out and not come that close to it without meeting it. So so that was kind of Q4 for PY24, which rolls right into our year-end performance. So for Title I, adult program and dislocated worker program met or exceeded all of their performance goals as set forth by U.S. Department of Labor. And just to note that we do have extremely high performance measure goals for our state when you compare it to the region, but also across the country. Our goals are pretty high for the number of folks that we serve. So it's an ever challenging measure when every 2 years they keep going up. So negotiations will happen this year for the next 2 years, so we'll be looking at all of that data. Like I said, the youth credential, we just missed it by a few percentage points. So we are working on a plan with youth subrecipients, and as to why it happened, it really was a combination between in-school youth have a different measure to meet. They have to not only get their diploma, but they also have to be working or in a secondary education up to a year after exit. So the diploma was not the problem. It's that working or secondary education, we don't always have those kids coming out of high school back in the workforce or in a secondary education program. As well as we had more out-of-school youth struggle this year with completing their programming, their trainings. So we didn't have as many successful completions, which means not as many credentials being attained. So we're working with the subrecipients across the board on not just eligibility, but suitability. We're really talking this year about the suitability of folks joining the program, because it is, it's not just about eligibility, it's also about suitability and wanting everyone to succeed, because another failure really does kind of hit them hard. So on whole, Title II, adult education, as well as Title III and Title IV, we're looking good across the programs. We are also working within all the title programs to find a way to provide this performance data in a more easily digestible format, as well as on a more regular basis. So we have a work group meeting to try and figure that out. But on the whole, it was a pretty good year. Enrollment numbers were not as high as they were in the previous couple of years, and that is mainly due to funding, as Melissa Carter said. We're getting less money. We're spending the money that is this year's money, so there's not a lot of carryover, which means we can't enroll as many folks as we used to the last couple of years. So that's performance in a nutshell. Any questions?
Any questions, anybody?
So item 2G is informational only. These are year-end reports that our subrecipients for our Title I program submit to the Office of Workforce Opportunity. So you will see a narrative from CAP HR for the adult and the old plus program. You'll see one from New Hampshire Employment Security on the Dislocated Worker Program. You'll see one from JAG NH as well as my turn for the youth program. So it gives you a nice synopsis of kind of a year in review. Any questions about those? And then I think my final item is 2H, which is the PY24 BO annual monitoring. So we at the Office of Workforce Opportunity do a lot of monitoring, both at the state level, the local level, the federal level. We had a couple of federal audits this year. We also had a lot of state monitoring that we did. We go out to each subrecipient at least annually. We also do guest reviews for compliance. We do equal opportunity annual reviews. We do a lot. We do data validation. So this monitoring report is basically a synopsis of the different monitoring activities that took place this year, as well as some of the findings that we had. It also talks about the 2024 PY24 calendar, but also it allows us to create PY25 monitoring calendar. The whole monitoring binder is about 300 or 400 pages big. It was reviewed by board member Deputy Commissioner Christine Brennan and Chase as well kind of signed off on it as board member. Any questions about the monitoring?
That's good.
And that is it for my report.
Thank you. Okay, Joe.
2I, which begins on page 76, is the program success stories. Again, for the record, Joe Dorian, 2I, program success stories. Happy to entertain any questions about that. Questions, there are some really good stories. I mean, we talk about performance metrics and whatnot, but these are kind of the these are the stories of the folks that we serve, which is pretty awesome.
Yes.
I just wanted to point out, as somebody that operates a program that works with you, a lot of the individuals that you see here, that
can you speak up just a little bit, please?
Pardon me?
Could you just speak up just a little bit? Is there another reporter? No.
There's one right there, too.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay.
I think I'll stand in the middle of the room, Commissioner, if you'd like me. I'm over here because I'm in cold recovery mode and I'm trying to be respectful, but I just think it's important as a SWIP board member to know that this, at the end of the day, this is the crux of our work. And being able to see that, you know, what we're doing across the board with the people in the state, it not only helps the employers, but it allows people to see a path to success. And when they repeat it to other people in their circle of life, that they can find this path forward, that there's a way to make it affordable, that partnerships that have been developed with community colleges and all those different things, and employers willing to take a chance to give people second chances and all that sort of stuff, really is, you know, I like to say that's the gas that fills the engine, right? And so if you do nothing else, which you should do it all, but reading those stories makes it worthwhile for you to come to the meetings and participate in the planning for the future.
Thank you so much, Natalie.
Do we follow up with them after and write stories about their full-time employment?
Lisa Gerard, for the record, we follow up with participants for a year after exit. So every participant that leaves a Title I program gets follow-up services for a year. we don't necessarily go back to the ones that we have success stories on for an update, but we could very easily kind of get that because we do follow them for a year. We're looking, we're asking questions about employment, we're asking questions about work life, do they need any other assistance, so we do that follow-up as well.
It'd be great for the board to see how many of them have full-time jobs and have maintained them from the work you did.
And we get, for the record, Joe Dorian, when we look at the median income, that's what we get as well, because then they're working. Or can you talk a little bit about the money? Because we're pretty good on those metrics, too. Really good.
So not at a participant level, but at a overall level, your performance measure, your second quarter after exit, are those individuals that exited and are employed second quarter. Your fourth quarter after exit are those same employees or participants that exited, and now it's four quarters after their exit. So your percentage is how many of those people are still employed. So we're seeing it as an aggregate, but we're not necessarily seeing the stories, the participant level stories. And the median wage or your median income is your second quarter after exit for each person that is employed. It basically takes that median wage. So we're seeing it, but not at a participant level, kind of at the participant level, we're not seeing it. But we could potentially ask some of the subrecipients to take one or two of these success stories and see if they could update them. It's something that we could absolutely ask for.
It may be helpful, right?
I agree. Absolutely. Okay, other questions, anybody?
Yeah.
Yes, right
there. I'm hearing it. So I just kind of process the last meeting, it was only my second meeting, so it's kind of a absurd question, but there were people here sharing their success stories. Does that not happen every meeting, or how often is that something that happens?
So Lisa Gerard, for the record, in June, every other June is when we do what you're talking about, which is our participant panel. So we do that every other June, but the success stories that are in the packet are every single board meeting. We will have a variety of success stories. The actual panel is every other year because, one, it takes a lot to kind of organize it, and two, it takes away from other board activities that we might need to get done, but it's every other year.
And for the record, Joe Dorian, as well, so part of the whole goal is to get folks into work, so then it's hard to then take them out of work.
Yeah.
So, and that's why it's not an unwillingness, it just becomes logistically very difficult, for especially folks in the dislocated worker program. You know, they're out of work for so long, then we got them trained, they're in a good gainful employment, then to pull them out, that sort of thing. So we try to strike that balance, but we can see what we can do in the future if you want something more regular. Because it's our favorite meeting. It's playing with our cards facing out. We love it because it's on full display, what we do. The why, the gas drive, the gas in the engine, Donnelly said.
Well, if I could just say, even if it's just a couple of individuals who have the bandwidth or the capability, I think it would be valuable to have more success stories and seeing the people and hearing from them.
We can definitely take a look. It just becomes a challenge, that's all. Logistical and getting the folks here. I'm looking at the program folks, because, like, on the youth side,
I think it's a good idea.
Yeah.
I just think that, let's put it this way, I don't want them to lose their job and then end up having to collect unemployment.
and we may have two other, maybe WIOA programs. Maybe I'm looking at Stephanie Ashworth, who's sitting over there, who represents Job Corps. Maybe we can look at other folks and other sort of things that we can do.
Stephanie Ashworth, for the record. So I'm the Senate Director at New Hampshire Job Corps, so we are obviously associated with WIOA, and our students' success stories are they're most proud of. So if they can't, we've had to, we've been fighting for the program since the end of May. So
we've turned to video success stories because we don't want them to necessarily take time out of work, but occasionally they would love to come, I'm sure, and brag a little bit about how, you know, proud of their story they are. So we're happy to do that if that's something people would like to occur more often. And if not, the videos have been a really powerful tool for us to use as well when we're not able to physically get them to the table.
That is something that we could
start looking at, is doing more electronically with video success stories, where we might be able to get the programs to do a little video, and then we could show, you know, one or two at the beginning of each meeting, or even have them rolling as you all come in to the meeting, so that it's continuously playing or something like that. It's just, we have to figure out how that would work and how to get it done and utilize it. But as Joe said, you know, the success stories are our favorite part as well. You know, we're removed from the participants, but the success stories allow us to kind of put the gas in our engine as well. So if there's anything that we can work out, we would definitely entertain it.
I like the idea of video, only because, one, if you do a video now, you could also do a video later on, a couple years later, as a follow-up, and you can play both of them as their kind of their story, and that really can give us some insight on how we affected their lives or changed their lives in a positive way, and that, I think, would show some really positive impact for us. I love seeing them here in person, but I think seeing the now and then the 2 years from now would be a much more impactful statement to me.
Stephanie, for the record, I know I'm speaking for myself, but if I knew, like, with some time in advance, like, we would be happy to do our phone video, so it wouldn't put any extra work on anybody else, but we would be happy to do something like that for the future.
Anything else?
Item 2J is New Hampshire Watch Conference. So just wanted to flag, so we'll be seeing a few of you twice this week, so sorry for that. So we are having, after the first successful one, we're going to have the second New Hampshire Works Conference this Friday. Huge shout out to NHTI and the Community College System who have donated it for free. Thank you. CAPHR generously donated the opening plenary session and food, so thank you. The board was very generous with providing allotting funds to us for supplies, so thank you. We're way under budget, which is great. But we'll be seeing a few of you, five or six of you board members, at the New Hampshire Works Conference this Friday. So we're still smiling as a team. Few more days, so Rebel Stoke Coffee has been getting certainly an increase in business from us, but we're going to be very excited. We have 180 people registered. We unfortunately had to send a few people away. We closed registration, what, 2 or 3 weeks ago, Jess? And then we were just kind of filtering a wait list, if you will, so some people had to drop, childcare fell through, situation, life happened, and then we were filling it as a first come, first serve basis. So if you are interested and you haven't registered, talk to us after. We might be able to, we probably can't feed you, looking at Jess, but maybe we can see what we can do. But we're excited. So if you have any questions about that, happy to entertain that. But also, too, we had our award committee. I'm looking two out of three. Rick Bartle is unfortunate. He's in Vegas today for a conference. I try to get him to take me with him, or go with him. But we have two of the three, Tracy Pelton and Alan Ballou, who served on the award review committee. So thank you both for volunteering. So we put together a process. We're going to tweak it for next year with their feedback. But some really great folks are going to be honored too Friday, because it's about professional development, but it's also great to acknowledge great work being done by the folks. So happy to entertain any questions about that.
So Tracy Pelton, for the board members that are attending, what would you like us to do? What role would you like us to play? Should we be thanking people and just meeting people and hearing their stories?
I think just meeting folks, enjoying going to some sessions, learning, you know, because we're going to have not only, you know, kind of the usual suspects, if you will, you know, you're going to see some names that are very familiar to you. We have other partners that are presenting as well, which would be good for you just enrichment-wise to learn a little bit more about the system and whatnot. But please let people know that you're SWIB members and who you are and what you do. The award folks, I was going to bug you both, but I'd love to have you on stage at the end for the award presentations, just to so that's the last thing of the day. But yeah, just being there.
I just want to commend Joe and the committee too. I mean, we just reinstituted, we had stopped for a significant amount of time. And then we're reinstituted, but I think, you know, the success of last year is evident when you've got, you know, 180 people to register for this year. Obviously, they enjoyed the time that they got together and sharing their stories and listening to some of the presentations. Probably would come into play at some point, but I want to thank Joe and the committee for all their hard work and putting this together. Okay.
We're excited for it, but I'm more excited for 4 o'clock. PM that Friday. You can see me at the Common Man at 4:15.
Is that an invitation?
Seriously. I mean, if you're buying.
Only $35 worth.
Yeah, I know, $35. So I'm sorry.
Off the record.
Not the weirdest thing you've said on these. The feds do listen every so often, and I think it's hilarious, so it's good for them. 2K is state plan update. So we saw a number of you over the summer. Can't get rid of us. And thank you for that. We appreciate you all. We did 2 virtual sessions in which we got some feedback on some goals. So what we did was we took out the goals and strategies section and put it here. So that's what you see here. You see, I used your feedback from the notes that we took and the conversations that were had. Hopefully it sounds okay or it looks better. The goal is to, get the goals done and the strategies. So once we're done with the conference, Lisa and I get to spend the next few months writing the state plan, which will be very fun. But you'll see here, goal 4, especially, we amended that or changed it, you know, and so I think it was Tracy Kelton who mentioned the goal of outreach and marketing. So that was something that we took to. We also updated some stuff in goal 5, especially around, to Cullen Tiernan's point about emphasizing state employee. The role of state employees play in the unit work system. So hopefully you've had time to read this and digest it. This is not a vote today on this. This is a temperature check. Are we doing, how are we doing? Is this something you like, something you don't like, something you hate? And we don't have to wordsmith everything here. If you feel more comfortable, if you want to shoot us an email with some edits or thoughts, share your edits and thoughts here. But we are just moving towards that goal of, at February, we need to provide you, we need to hold a vote here, so to get that state plan in on time. And we have received 0 guidance from the federal government on how we will get it. This time of year, 2 years ago, we had access to the portal, we had instructions on what we needed to do, we had briefings, we had guidance, and we have nothing. So
maybe they'll get rid of it.
My prayers will be answered then, Richard. But thoughts?
Any thoughts, questions, suggestions, anything?
Yes. Colin Tiernan. One for our friends listening from the federal government, I hope you're not furloughed. But I just wanted to actually say thank you for including the state employee piece. I think it looks really great, and it was a good experience giving you all feedback and working as a team on this.
Thank you. There's no pride of ownership here. This is a document that you all have to vote on and agree to. So if there's something you don't like, something you do like, please let us know. Thank you for that. And just happy to make it.
Donald, or if you need help with people to read and edit and look for typos because your eyes glaze over at some point, I'm sure there are people on this board that might be willing to do that if you break it into small chunks.
Are you perhaps a volunteer?
I'm offering.
I was just thinking, she didn't really volunteer.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
Well, I just figured that others would go, yeah, we do. But I'm just like,
yeah, we
do. I operate in it all the time.
Yes, Chase.
Chase Eggman, just wanted to commend the team and the board for jumping into this strategy and process, which is different than years past, and really appreciate the time and effort you all put into it. I know it's been a lot of hard work, but it's churning out a good product.
Anybody else? Anything?
Did we nail goal four? Can we get it?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's awesome.
Okay. We're going to move on to board motions and discussions. Do for the record, George Kapanis and Joel Kapanis do these items as well.
Yep. Thank you, Commissioner. So item 3A is something that we do every so often for our candidate from DHHS here. But DHHS is part of the New Hampshire Work System. They'll be at the conference this Friday. They're great partners. And they have to put together a SNAP employment and training program, SNAP ENT state plan. So they have their own state plan that they have to do as well. And thankfully, the only thing we have to do, we as a staff, is essentially look at that plan, make sure that it is meeting the goals of the existing New Hampshire state plan, which it is, and then bring it to the board. It was included in the board item, so it was one of the attachments. There's nothing in there that is controversial. There's nothing in there that doesn't seem right to us. It's a very well done document, very well done plan. And it's between this SNAP ENT plan and what's the other one, Lisa? There was one other plan that we do. It's like once we do this one this year, and then there's another one next year, and I can't remember which.
Is the TANF
one? I'm sorry. So it's staggered. So this time next year, we'll bring before you the TANF one as well, and it's the same sort of process. So they bring it to us. It's a federal requirement that the Workforce Innovation Board, each state or each locality, in the case of local boards, have to review it, provide it a blessing, and then they do so through a vote. That makes sense. Some board members, you've been around, you've done this a few times, but so if you're wondering why we're going to do this again next October, it's just a staggered thing.
So bless you.
Happy to take any questions if that didn't make a whole lot of sense.
Any questions, anybody? If not, you need a motion.
Correct, and we don't need a roll call, we just need an up or down.
Okay. Motion made by, well, is that what you're doing?
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't know whether you still had a question.
Nope.
Go ahead.
Natalie Lozo, I make the motion that the State Workforce Innovation Board supports the New Hampshire Department of Health and Human Services SNAP and ENT state plan as presented.
Okay, motion made. Second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? Motion carries.
Mr. Chairman, item 3B, we're going to have one of the topics for the February 3rd meeting, which is, I don't love talking about 2026, but it's right around the corner. And I won't say how many shopping days left till Christmas. I'm already counting at home. The next meeting is February 3rd, but we'll have the state plan that day. But if there's anything else that the board would like us to put on the agenda for that meeting. I just pray every year it doesn't snow on February 3rd.
Good luck with that.
I know.
Yeah. Tracy Felton, if it's possible to have some of the longer term stories of people that have maintained their work experience and have grown, there were some pretty exceptional nursing and EMT and different things like that that we have a high need for, even in the skilled workforce and trade force. It'd be great to hear some of those long term stories.
Okay.
Maybe a survey, just saying, you know, you got this training, are you actually using it now as your career continues?
Anything else, anybody? Thank you, Tracy.
Curious, they call it, Karen, the implementation of the goals. Is that something that we would discuss naturally, or would that need to be identified? Or? We just went over the...
Are you referring to the state plan goals? And that's, it'll be on the February meeting.
Yeah. So that, from there, so the goal would be on the February 3rd meeting is, so we'll provide you the, if I could, and I don't mean to over-explain, just so you understand kind of a little bit of the process, because it's very different for us this time around than in the past. So we're hoping to have, I don't have my work plan in front of me, but the goal would be by January is to have a final plan that we put out for public comment on the website. We're not going to do any public comment sessions, but we'll put it out there, make sure everybody has a chance and wants to read it, can read it, and then we will then send it out to the board for your review. So give you a few weeks on that, and then we'll have a vote on February 3rd on that. And that also will allow for any edits that need to be done. So, you know, anything real substantively, you know, we don't want to get, oh, Joe, there's a comma on page 88. You know, we can do that contingent upon, as we've done in the past, contingent upon like a final run through of grammatical spell check error, that sort of thing, on February 3rd. So then once February 3rd has happened, then we can talk about how do we do this, that sort of thing. But we need to get the board to approve the plan, but then it goes to the feds, who have to then review and approve or kick it back to us. So that's a long process. So we may not even have review or approval by the June meeting, which is frustrating. We've come close where the board packet, you know, that day, we got word from the feds. Does that make sense? Am I helping?
Yeah, parity. And I'm glad the federal government gets to review it.
Yeah. So, last time we did it, we actually received really high marks from them for what it's worth. It was like the easiest one they said in the country to read, one of their favorites for the entire region. Like they really, we did really, you know, really well at meeting the requirements.
And that was when we got a vendor.
Correct.
I had to get a comparison.
We're just looking at doable and compliant. That's what we're trying to get.
Anything else, anybody?
That's it for us, Mr. Chairman.
Is there a motion to adjourn?
I've been on a roll with that.
Okay. Motion and DLL. Second call. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thanks everybody for coming today.
Yeah, 3 hours of work.